What happened last week is that Micha, who was from Shevet Ephraim, made himself a pesel, an idol, and he enlisted in the service of this idol, he enlisted one of the Levim, the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, as his Kohen, as his priest. And he was happy and living well. And now, as we leave off the story, we pick up somewhere else, and the threads will come together in this parak. Pasuk Ches begins on the top left. Vayomim ha'em in those days, and Melech Yisrael, there was no king in Israel. Vayomim ha'em in those days, Shevet ha'Dani mevakish lo nachala, the tribe of Dan was looking for inheritance, lo sheves, in which to dwell, ki lo nachala lo ada yomahu, because they had not fallen to them until that day any portion, lo sheves, in which to live, ki lo nachala, they didn't have till that time in the tribes of Israel any nachalah, any inheritance. Now, my notes here, I believe, are on page 5, and you can follow along with them if you'd like, although you don't have to. Page 4. The pasuk tells us, Ein Melech Bisrael. Perhaps, this is my own hypothesis, we are setting the stage for Sefer Shmuel when Am Yisrael get their first king. I'm explaining here why it was necessary, why we need the king. Obviously, things in this parak are going to happen, which are going to prove that lawlessness reigned in Israel at this time. The Radak proves from this pasuk, from this verse, that this was not during the period of Asnio ben Knaz. He says, since it's talking about Ein Melech Bisrael, it's as if the pasuk is telling us that ain't so faith be Yisrael as well. And therefore he says clearly this whole episode of Pesel Micha, unlike all the other Mepharshim, the Radak says clearly from this passage we learned the episode of Pesel Micha occurred between Shimshon and Eli, because we learned that there were 20 years between Shimshon and Eli that there was no Shofet. So he says, En Melech Bisrael is the same like Ein Shofet Bisrael, and therefore he says that the Maisa Pesel Micha happened late, not early, in the period of the Shoftim. Yes.
It all depends upon whether one defines melech in the broadest generic terms, I mean any kind of government
right.
rule, as opposed to anarchy, or whether you take it in the very literal, specific sense, som tasim alecha melech, not shofet, lo kohen.
That's correct. It depends on that. The Radak is very certain.
Very fundamental kind of.
Right,
thing.
The Radak is very certain that a shofet and a melech are the same. The Rashi, interestingly enough, learns the exact opposite from this puzzle. Rashi says, since we're talking about Don not having a nachalah, it's not logical to say that Shevet Dan was running around for the 300 some odd years of the period of the Shoftim without any portion in the land of Israel. It must be that this was taking place at the beginning, during the time of Asnio ben Knaz, when people were settling down. And Shevet Dan, they didn't have a proper nachla in the south, they didn't have a proper place to live, and that's why they started looking for somewhere else to live. So according to the Radak, you have to say that 350 years, they were taka, not comfortable where they were. And now they're finally getting together to go and look for somewhere else to live. According to Rashi, you see that this is talking way back in the beginning, and Ein Melech Bisrael means even though there were Shoftim, there were no kings in the strictest, most narrow meaning of the word. In other words, there were these no monarchs to control the land properly. We had learned previously in the previous parak that the Ein Melech Bisrael means that there was no spiritual leadership in Am Yisrael. Later on, in Sefer Shmuel, when we get to David, we'll find the king who eradicated idolatry and wiped out all possible foreign worship from the land of Israel. At this point, there was a lack of malchus, which allowed the idolatry to rage rampant.
But that interpretation only raises another complication, and
yeah.
that is that there wasn't exactly a high madrigal spirituality.
Oh.
My rabuta, what's the chidush here?
Oh, that there's Ein Melech Bisrael in this parak?
Because this wasn't before, there wasn't?
Yes, there was no parak. We learned in the previous parak, Ein Melech Bisrael, we're continuing the same theme. The Navi stresses several times throughout the last few prakim in Shmuel, that Ein Melech Bisrael, no Melech, no Melech, no Melech, over and over again. And that's why I say, I think it's really setting the stage for Sefer Shmuel, to stress all these terrible things happen when there are no king, therefore a king is going to be imminently necessary. The thing is also, one could learn Ein Melech Bisrael means, although this is a little bit drush, as we mentioned last week, ein malchus b'Yisrael. There's no, there's the kingship of God, l'sakin olam b'malchus shakai, the kingship of God over the world was lacking, and therefore there's going to be rampant idolatry in this parak. Looking a little bit further in this pasuk, the pasuk says, ki lo naflo ad hayom hu b'soch shivtei Yisrael. They didn't have until this day a portion within the Shvatim of Am Yisrael. And the reason that what this means is that they did have a portion. But it was all the way in the south. We know that Don was on the border with the Plishtim. And therefore, things were always hot over there. And they weren't happy with it. Whether it's in the early days or the late days of the period of Shoftim, there wasn't a comfortable place to live. And they were so they was at the fringe. And remember, in the Midbar too, where was Shevet Don? They were the Ma'aseif L'chol HaMachanos. They were always at the fringe. Because we say Shevet Don is the lowest of the Shvatim, and they're the ones who are the most connected to the Goyim because of their low stature, and therefore here too, when they got their Nachlo, they got it on the fringe near the Plishtim. Therefore, the Malim says, it was also not Ba'Nachlo, even where they were. In other words, the last word of the Pasuk is Ben-Nachlo. Ben-Nachlo, the Beis is funny. Should have said, Lo-Kilo Naflo Arayomu B'Sok Shivtei Yisrael Nachlo. What does bin nachalah mean? It means the Malbim darshans that to mean. He says that the extra base teaches us that even within the portion which they had, they were not comfortable because they were constantly suffering attacks from the goyim. So they went to look somewhere else. The Bnedonites sent out from their family, Chamisha Anoshim, five people, Miktsoisam from the nobles, Ktsoisam is like Kitsinim, the nobles of the tribe, Anoshim and Echayo, people who were warriors. Now, as the Malbim points out, there was a dual purpose for this mission. There are two reasons to send spies. And he says in Hebrew there are two different words for them, Torim and Meraglim. A Tor is somebody to tour the land to check out its quality. A Meragil is a spy who goes to see how to conquer the land militarily. So they sent people of both Kitsinim, who were high and noble, and therefore able to assess the quality of the land, and also Anshei Chayil, also soldiers. So they would be able to ascertain, whichever land they found, what the proper way of conquering it is. Mitzorah Meshtol, they sent them from Tzorah Meshtol, and this seems to be the place where the distinguished members of Shevet Don live. We know Shimshon, many times is mentioned as having lived Bein Tzorah Ben Eshtol. Says Vayochel Ruach Hashem Lefamo b'Machane Don Bein Tzorah v'Eshtol. So Tzorah v'Eshtol, that was, I guess, one of the centers, the loci of activity in Shevet Don. Interestingly enough, that part was on the boundary with Yehuda. We saw that previously. That's why Manoach was from Shevet Don, married Salphonis from Shevet Yehuda, because there was intercourse back and forth in that area. So therefore, this is the place where they sent out the Ktsinim, the most noble people from. L'ragil starts to go do l'ragil, that's to check out militarily, u'l'chokra, and to analyze it qualitatively. Vayomra Alehem, and the people have done charge him with the following mission. L'chu chikru asarets, go and check out the land. Now, perhaps they didn't realize, the Malbim says, that these people, being warriors, could do both. But the warriors did set out to do both. Not just chikru, not just to analyze. They also are going to set out, as we'll see presently, to figure out militarily what their options were. But on the way, going to find themselves a land, vayavo har Ephraim, they came to the mountain of Ephraim, ad beis micha, to the house of micha, vayilonu sham, and there they went to sleep overnight. Now, I got it, vayilonu sham, they stayed overnight. Now, I gotta tell you, I don't have any connection to make. But there's a remarkable similarity here to Yosef. When Yosef's family came down to Mitzrayim, it says, "Umiktzei echav laka chamisha anoshim." He took from the ktzei. Also, here it says miktzosam, and there it says miktzei. And there's machlokas there in Chazal. Does miktzei mean there the strongest or the weakest? And he brought those five brothers to Paro. The Paro should meet them, and the Paro should then appoint them to be shepherds. I don't know what the connection is. I couldn't figure it out. I tried. Didn't work. The best connection I can make is a tenuous one, that Michal falls from Shevet Ephraim, and that was Yosef who was involved, but that's highly, highly tenuous. I invite you to put your creative juices to work and try and come up with something. I give you the data, you work with it. In any event,
thanks so much.
Yeah. Hey, you can't get everything spoon-fed by the teacher. Hey, my base micha. There they were in the house of micha. Vehemai kiras kol anara Levi. And they recognized the voice of this the Levi, which was taken there to be a Kohen. Now I think that since Torah and Eshtol were of Shevet Yehuda as well, and we know that this Nar lived in Beis Lechem Yehuda. In fact, the Gemara Baba Basra brings down that some were of the opinion that he was from Mishpachas Yehuda on his mother's side. So therefore, Don and Yehuda were next to each other, especially Torah and Eshtol. So they knew it was from the neighborhood. Besides that, it could be. Remember, this Levi was the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. So as a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, he probably had some high profile, and therefore they knew who he was. Famikius Kolanara Levi. They must have heard him doing the worship. They remembered his voice. And they came there to see in the temple. They were in the house of Micho to stay overnight. They heard the Levi in the temple. They went to the temple. And they said to him, Vayomru lo miyaviyecha halom. They said, who brought you here? Umato sebezer. What are you doing in this thing? Umayl chapo. What do you have here? Now, the Gemara in Baba Basra says that the halom here refers to the sneh. Because at the sneh, Moshe Rabbeinu has said, al tigrab halom. Don't come close. Then shal na'alcha mir aglecha. Take your shoes off, etc. The mazeh, here it says in the Pasuk Gemara, the bazeh, rather refers to the mazeh. When Kosh Baruch said to Moshe Rabbeinu at the sneh, Mazeh biyodecha. What's that in your hand? The staff with which you should do the osos, which he was going to do the wonders. Umalcha po refers, this is a little bit more of a stretch, but the po here alludes to the pet, the mouth, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu when he finally got angry at him, Misam peh l'adam. Who's the one who gave a mouth to an individual? You think you can't talk? If I want to, I can make you talk just fine. And what they were saying to him, you're the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. What are you doing in a house of idolatry? So, it seems that they were saying that they were bringing up a very interesting point, which is, you know, the Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't know if you remember this, but Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush was punished for not being willing to go right away. It's by Yichar Af Hashem ben Moshe. And the Chazal say, Rashi brings it down there, in Charon Af, below Roshem. Whenever a God gets angry, it makes an impression. What did Moshe lose as a result of not wanting to go? The kahuna. Interesting that they're mentioning this in the context of this Levi who became a Kohen. The grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu who became a Kohen. The wrong kind of Kohen. But he became a Kohen. And perhaps what they were saying to him is, your grandfather lost at the sneh, the kahuna. What business do you have becoming a Kohen, especially the wrong kind? On a deeper level, I would say, why did Moshe Rabbeinu lose Gehuna? A Kohen is somebody who has a very, very strong, focused sense of mission. He's the emissary of Am Yisrael vis-a-vis God, and the emissary of God vis-a-vis the nation. You need a very focused, very, very total sense of mission to be a Kohen. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have it. He kept on refusing to go over and over again. He couldn't be brought to be convinced to put himself on this mission. Therefore, Kosh Baruch said, you can't be a Kohen. A Kohen has to be focused, completely given over, with that great sense of devotion, and that mission applies, so you don't have that. And they were saying to this grandson, we see, now Taka, we see that he was right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in depriving Moshe Rabbeinu of the kahuna, because his grandchildren are so bereft of a sense of mission of being HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emissaries that they even make themselves kohanim for Avodah Zarah. I want to explain a little bit more. The Gemara says that he responded to them, although the response which was brought down here in the next pasuk is not the response which the Gemara says. Let's see the next pasuk. Vayomer aleihem, he said to them, Kozeh v'kozeh asali micha. Such and such micha did to me, by his kireni, and he hired me, v'hehi lo l'kohen, and I became for him a kohen. So Chazal say, there in Baba Basra, they say that he responded that he had a Kabbalah from Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, I have a tradition from my grandfather. which is the olam yaskir adam esatzmo la'avodah zarah v'yitzarech labrios. A person should hire himself out even to be a priest for avodah zarah and not go on the public welfare. What he's saying, I learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. He said that a person should hire himself out to be a kohen for avodah zarah and not learn in kollel. I didn't want to do that. So he said, I have this Kabbalah from Moshe. So the Gemara says he made a mistake. What Moshe Rabbeinu had said was a person should hire himself out to be a janitor or a worker in the house of Avodah Zarah, but not to be a priest of Avodah Zarah. That was a major error. So, in essence, we don't see this in the Pasuk exactly. Perhaps, this is just my rumination, when he says, I was wandering around. I was wandering around. We know that he was wandering looking for a parnasa, right? He was on his way trying to find a parnasa. V'chazeh asali micha. Micha took me in. V'yaski reini. And he hired me. It happened that I came here on my way, wandering, and it seemed that luck, that Kosh Baruch Hu's hashkocha in this case, wired me to be here. This is the way I got my living. I took that as a sign, v'ehilo l'kohen, that I should be for him a kohen. But the thing is, bottom line, however you interpret the pasuk, we know he was in it for the money. And that the mission of being an Oved Hashem, he was able to sacrifice when he needed a parnasa. Yaski Rainey. The emphasis on, not he doesn't say, what?
Maybe he was in it for the prestige.
No, it could be. It could be the prestige also. I grant you that. But it wasn't L'shem Shamayim. It wasn't because he held Pesel Micha was the great worship which everybody should focus on. There was no idealistic statement about the glory and beauty of Avodah Zarah here. He's saying, Tachos. I need a parnosa, that I need, or I want a covet, let's say. This is what I decided to do. And he came up with the rationalization from Moshe Rabbeinu. But he misunderstood because he wanted the money. The Gemara says that the onus on special midah was chemdas hamamon. He loved money. So therefore, what happens here is that he sacrificed his sense of mission, his sense of good, because he wanted the money. And Vayomrulo, let's go further. They said to him, Shalno be'elohim, ask God. Now here God is chol. Now you have to bear in mind what's going on here. Very careful. You will note, let's do this two psalm together so I can show you the contrast. Vayomrulo, Shalno be'elohim, ask the God, the idol, the Nagon will know how tatzlach darkenu. Is our mission going to, our path going to be successful? Asher nachlu holchim olah, that which are going on. Vayomala Kohen, the Kohen said to them, L'chul shalom, go in peace, nochach Hashem, kevavkei darkechem, God is paying attention to your path, asher telchu bon, which you'll go. Shevet Dan, even after they were amazed at the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson is there, they're perfectly willing to accept foreign gods. They view this idol as Elohim. Elohim Achirim. Obviously, Don, being the lowest of the low, they're comfortable with the idea, let's go ask the foreign gods, why not? Gesundheit, wherever we can get our information. But he answered, Yudke Vavke. First of all, it doesn't say he asked the idol. You see, he doesn't say that, he just assured them. Besides that, he quoted Yudke Vavke. He didn't say, it's foreign god so-and-so. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we know that Micha himself, we saw this last week, Micha himself looked at the idol not as a deity, but rather as a physical manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is unlike any other idol. It wasn't like Baal or Ashtoreth or Kamosh or any of those other gods. Micha saw it as Yudke Vavke in physical form. But they didn't see it that way. Micha saw it that way, and the lady saw it that way, but not them. They were willing to accept it as stam idolatry. In any event, I have to be honest with you, and I have to tell you that some of the Rishonim say that the Donites saw the Trophim as magic. So they didn't see it as Avodah Zarah. They saw it as magic, as some soothsaying oracle. But I don't think that's true from the pasuk. From the fact that they said Elohim, And we know Elohim, throughout the parasha of Pesel Micha, is used to indicate idolatry. It seems they accepted it as idolatry. Again, however, as I pointed out, when he himself answered, the Kohen answered, when Yonason answered, he answered trying to bring in Yudke Vavke, trying to bring in HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Okay, on they went. Vayelchu Chameshes Anoshim. The five people went further. Vayavo Laisha, and they came to a town called Laish, which is kind of in very far north, somewhere in the area of Syria and Lebanon. Not in the Promised Land. Important to know. Not in the Promised Land. Ayura saw Masher Bekirba, and they saw the nation which was in Laish. Yosheves Lebetach. They were sitting secure. They weren't a warlike nation. Why? The Chumash gives the Navi gives us now several reasons. A, Kimishpat Sidonim. They were like the people who lived in Sidon. The people who lived in Sidon, the Malmi has beautiful interpretations of Pasuk, which I'm going to follow. The people who lived in Sidon were merchants. And merchants are not warlike people. They don't make their money from waging war. They make their money from trade. So therefore, these people, A, were not warlike because their living was made by merchandise. By the way, I forgot, the Radak says that they were like the Tzidonim. He gives a different shine like that they were Tzidonim. He says, just like Sidon is outside of the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, so too Laish was outside the land of Canaan. So they weren't afraid of the Jews, and therefore they didn't arm themselves because they said, the Jews are not going to come and conquer us. We're not part of the land which was promised to them. We're safe. Okay, so those are two interpretations in Tzidonim. Beside next, Shoketu Voteach. They were tranquil and they were secure. Why? The Malbim explains they had no known enemies. Next, they machlim dover ba'aretz. There were no internal difficulties. Emachlim dover means there were no internal strife, no internal embarrassments. Also, there was no Yorish Etzer. Yorish Etzer in modern Hebrew means the heir to the throne. And here too, the Radak says the heirs to the throne were very young, and therefore they had not been able to create great strife within the country. The Rabbah says it was a republic. There were no Yorshi Etzer at all. And he says, in order to make people patriotic and warlike, you need a monarch. In republics, people don't get excited about wars. So that was another reason, although we know in Greece they did. All right, but he says that here there was no... Yeah, since there was no monarch, so therefore they weren't able to rally as a warlike people. And the Malbim says there were no heirs at all. In other words, there were kings, but there were no heirs at the moment. Be that as it may, there was no internal strife nor internal rallying, and therefore they were very non-militaristic. Urechoki meimam et Sidoni. They were far away from Sidon, who were the only allies. Those one allies, who obviously were fellow merchants, were not nearby. The Dover Elohim Imadam, with the people nearby, with the people in the vicinity, they had no pacts. This is an ideal nation to conquer. They were so peaceful, tranquil.
Isolationist,
right? They and B'nai Dan said, oh, great. This is where we're coming. Vayavolachem Tzor Veshto. They came to their brethren back in Tzor Veshto. Vayomalem Achim. And their brethren said to them, Matem, what did you see? Matem means, how did it go with you? Vayomru, they said, Kuma v'na'aleh, let us rise up, v'na'aleh aleim, and we'll go up against them. Kirena starts, we saw the nation, the land, rather. V'nei tova mod, that land is very good. Vatem achshim, and you're lazy, or you're holding back, quietly. Altiaslu, don't be lazy. Lolechas to go lavol ereshes arts and to come inherit the land. What? Chamush could be. I don't see anybody who says that. Mechashim, I think mostly people translate as waiting or quiet, but chamushim would be. Batem achashim would be a good. If one could.
Granted.
If one could translate Mechashim as well armed, then of course it would fit in very well. I just didn't see anybody who did it, but that's an interesting idea. Kivachem, when you come there, Tavo el Amboteach. Now, two things. First of all, Pasuk says they're talking about the quality of the land, as Torim. They said, we were choker the Oretz, and there was very beautiful, very good, superior land to live. Besides, in Pasuk Yud, they're telling, from a military standpoint, when you come to a land which is secure, and this is a great and broad land, Elohim, I should say. I'm not sure if this is Elohim or Elohim, whether referring to Kesh Baruch Hu or to the peso, but or to idolatry. But God will give it over to your hands. Mokam Hashem Shem Machzor, a place, now they're going back to their job as Torim, a place there's no shortage, cold over, of anything, Asher Ba'aretz, which is in the land. Yeah. Yeah.
This whole business, one assumes that they went all the way from the southern Negev, all the way
to the north,
and they even exceeded the northernmost boundary, and they crossed into...
Yeah.
Their terms of reference, their mandate from Sheva Dan was to find a place, the Tocharetz.
Where they...
And we're at the beginning here.
Where did they get the mandate in the land of Israel? Uh-huh. Doesn't say where.
No, Haaretz, one assumes, didn't mean as far as Istanbul. It meant the Haaretz.
Who said?
Sheva Dan was so out of it that they were prepared to take any piece of land wherever
they went. They were prepared to take wherever they went. Look, they weren't the biggest Yerushalayim. They weren't even the biggest Zionists, probably. They were not religious Zionists, so therefore they're willing to go. They're certainly not Yeshanics. So therefore they were willing to go wherever they got a piece of land.
And there was nothing in between. There was nothing.
Everything in between was settled by other Jews. They were the northernmost. Everything else was settled by other Jews in between. They were northern, further north than Naphtali, than the Zvulun, the furthest northern reaches, northern Pine Sol, which was unsettled by Jews. Where else are they going to go? They were that civil that they weren't going to fight their fellow Jews to get a Nachla. Maybe they were afraid of fighting their fellow Jews.
You have another reason for saying Elohim and not
the... You're okay. It's fine with me. I see the Targum says you Hashem. But who knows? Vayisu mishom mishpachas Adoni. So the bottom line is they're traveling from there from the family of Doni, not the whole Shevet of Don. Mitzorah Meshto, from Tzorah Meshto, Sheshmos Ish. 600 men. Plus women and children, we'll see later. Chagr claimed Milchama, and they were belted with instruments of war. Vayalu, and they went up. Vayachanu, and they camped with Kiryas Yorim. Kiryas Yorim is in Yehuda. For those of you who are familiar with the Yerushalayim Tel Aviv Road, that's where Telstone is today, Abu Ghosh. Alkein Koru Amokam Alu Machanedon, and that's why this place is called Machanedon. Ad Yom Hazeh, until this very day, Hinei Acharei Kiryas Yorim, it's behind Kiryas Yorim. Now, I don't know, I don't remember anybody picking up on this previously, and certainly nobody picks up on this now, but there's a blatant thing here, which I'm surprised nobody says, which is, at the end of Perek Yudalid, Yud Gimel, where he first saw Shimshon, the last pasuk said, I quoted it before, V'toche Ruach Hashem Lefamo, the Spirit of God started banging within him. The Machane Don, in the camp of Don, Bein Tzorah Ben Eshtol, between Tzorah and Eshtol. Now, once you've seen this pasuk in Perek Yud Ches, and you think back to Perek Yud Gimel, where's Machane Don? This is Machane Don. It says here what Machane Don is. The camp of Don is this one. And then it makes very good sense to say, like the Rashi, that Shimshon took place after Dom Eisenshin, took place after Pesel Micha. Because when was the name Machane Don given to a tract of land? Here, by Pesel Micha. And then where it says in Shimshon, Vayoch Ruach Hashem Lufamo B'Machane Don, it's talking about this Machane Don, whose name had been set many years earlier.
But Machane Don versus this place between, it's in the center.
This is in the old location. This is still in the old location, near Yehuda, it says here.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a nice try, but considering...
It's more than a nice try.
Considering that God was landless and were bedding and moving around, one could say Machane Adan Aleph and Machane Adan Bet.
But look, it says Tzorah Nesht all over here, it says Machane Adan over here. What?
But this time it's part of their migrations.
No, and I'll tell you another thing. I'll get a little bit more mystical. Which is, what happened in Kiryas Yorim? You can't know this. Well, you can, but we didn't learn this. In Shmuel Aleph, Kiryas Yorim comes up again. Shmuel Aleph Perek Vav Perek Zayin. So what happened was there is that during the time of Eli, as you know,
isn't that where the Aram?
Very good. At the time of Eli, as you know, Chofni and Pinchas, his sons, took the Aram to war, even though they weren't supposed to, and the Plishtim seized the Aram. And there are all sorts of strange things happened to the Plishtim. Bottom line is they sent it back to the Jews. So first it came to Beit Shemesh, and the Beit Shemesh people died as a result. They didn't want it. Then the Aram went to Kiryas Yearim. And it stayed in Kiryas Yearim for 20 years. So I'm telling you, hypothesis, that this is why Ruach, Vayoch Ruach Hashem Lefamo, B'machane Don, Betzorah V'Nershto, why did Shimshon, five prakim ago, why did he get his first burst of Ruach HaKodesh in Kiryas Yearim? Because Kiryas Yearim was going to be a holy place. That was the nature of Kiryas Yearim. It was a holy place because the Aron was going to be there. For 20 years! How long was Shimshon and Sher Shoifid for? 20 years. 20 years. So I think that, and we know this is a basic Yisoid in Reb Tzadok, a fundamental concept, that events in the future have an impact already in the present. I think we've spoken about that before. So therefore, here too, I'm hypothesizing that this place, Kiryas Yearim, this Machane Don, is the same Machane Don by Shimshon. And it was a place which was both positive and negative. It was negative because Machane Don here represents the illicit ascent of the Donite tribes to become idolaters and to murder an entire nation, as we're going to see in the rest of the parak. But also represented a place of Kedusha, because it's the place where the Aron was for 20 years as well. And Shimshon got caught in the middle. He had the elements of Don from Machane Don, and the elements of the Aron from Machane Don, and he had both aspects in his lifetime. Alright, that's a little bit of a flashback to Shimshon. Let's come back now. Actually, we're going back in time. Let's go back in time to Pesel Micha. I just want to reemphasize again that I think that I hold that this is a proof for the Rashi and his interpretation that the mice of Pesel Micha preceded the mice of Shimshon, and that was why the Machane Don appears there. Okay? Vayavru Misham Har Ephraim, they passed from there. It's interesting. When they went to Kiryas Yearim, it's called in Pesuk Yud Beis and Aliyah. That's going up. When they went from there to Har Ephraim, at Vayavoa Beis Michal, that's called an Aveira. Now they're going certainly not up, and it's going to commit an Aveira, and I think that that's the Lashon of Vayavru. Vayanu Chameshes Anoshim Ha'ochim L'Ragel Soretz, as Soretz Laish, and the five people who went originally to scout out Laish, Vayomel Achen, they said to their they opened up, and the Vayomel Achen, they said to the brothers, Hayetatem, did you know? Kiesh Vabat Meir, there's a whole compound there. It's a whole temple compound. And it's an ephod. The ephod was the ceremonial garments they wore, the Kohen wore. Usrafim are little idols, kind of like charms. Upesel, the pesel was the major focus of this cult, the idol. Umasecha is another graven image, a smaller one, I believe. Vatoa now, duma tasu. Know what you gotta do. What do you gotta do? We gotta steal it. This is a holy idol. It can be good for us. We have to take it with us. Vayasur Shama, so they went over there to the house of Micha, to the compound of Micha, I should say. Vayavo Beis Anar Levi, and they came to the house of the Nara Levi, which was within the Beis Micha. The Kohen's compound was within the general compound of Micha. Vayishua Lola Shalom, and they asked him how he's doing. Now, they told him, the five guys went there and said, you know, we're here, but we're with the Chevra, with the 600 guys, you know? So you have to come outside and say hello to everybody. So, the 600 other people, holding with their belts of war, were standing outside the Shar, and they were all from Bnei Don. So he went out. I'm using the Malbim here, who interprets the Pesukim this way. He went out to give shalom to everybody, you know, to farbring together with these 600 guys. So in the meantime, the five guys snuck in behind them. And they knew where the Pesel was. Bo Shama, they went into the sanctuary. Lochus ha-pesel v'sa'ipo v'sa'trofim v'sa'masecho. They took everything, they cleaned out the sanctuary. V'ha-kohen itza pesach ha-shar. And the Kohen didn't realize what's going on because he was still out the outside of the gate. V'sheish mo'sa'ish, smoozing with the 600 guys. Ha-chog u'klem ha-chom, who had the warriors. V'ilbo pes micha. In the meantime, these five guys have gone into the house, of Micha. Now, what does it mean, Beis HaMicha? You have to depict this in your mind's eye. There was a whole compound of Micha's houses. In the middle of the compound was the sanctuary. So the 600 guys stood outside the compound. The lady went out to meet them. In the meantime, the five guys went in through the compound of Micha, into the middle, into the sanctuary, quietly, got out the pestle, trophim, etc. As they were coming out, they came out through the compound of Micha. The Kohen was going in. The Levi guy was going in. So as they were coming out to the compound of Micha, he was going in. And the Kohen said to them, Matem Osim, what are you doing? What are you taking all this stuff? What's going on here? Vayomulo, and they said to him, Hacharesh. Be quiet. Silence. Simyot Chapicha. Put your hand on your mouth. Velechimon. And go with us. Now the Maalam points out, obviously, had the Kohen raised the Yuin cry, then the people from Naus Micha would have come, swooped out immediately, and taken back the Pesel, Masecha, the whole business. But he had just asked them in a normal tone of voice, Matem Osim, what are you doing? And they said, shh, don't say anything more. You know what? The Lechimon will come with us. The Yevon, you should be for us of a patriarch, a leader, or Kohen and our priest. What's better? They were playing to a sense of power and money here. Hatova Yosra Kohen Lebesi Shechar, is it better for you to be a Kohen for one family? For the house of one man? Or Yosra Kohen, or to be the Kohen Ulashevet Umishpacha be Israel, for an entire tribe, an entire family. It wasn't the entire tribe, actually, I should say. For the tribe of Dan, specifically the family which is going up north, in Am Yisrael. So, needless to say, our Levi here, Vaitav Lev HaKoyim, they liked the idea. Vaikach HaSa'ifot, Ves HaTrofim, he took the ceremonial garb, the little idols, Ves HaPosel, and the big idol, himself. Vayavo B'Kerabam, and he came together with the Danites to now go up north with them. So a couple of things here. First of all, he didn't take the Masecha. As remember, we said so before, there's a pesel, ephod, trophim, and masecha. Four objects. By the way, this obviously was a whole cult because all these developed into a whole cult because these things were not mentioned. In previous paragraph, we just mentioned a pesel and masecha. Now, all of a sudden, we got a trophim, ephod. Obviously, this developed over time. That's first of all. However, the second thing is that he didn't take the masecha. Now, my hunch is like this, that the pesel was an aspect of this cult, as we said before, which represented God in human form. Masecha was probably a normal, regular Avodah Zarah. Masecha generally means a figure, a mask, and that probably was a regular Avodah Zarah. So the Kohen still being somewhat, understanding of the true nature of Avodah Zarah, didn't take the Masecha. He took the Ephod and the Trophim and the Posel. The Posel represented Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Ephod was just a ceremonial garb. And Trophim, the Mepharshim say, were kind of crystal balls to foretell the future. So therefore, it wasn't real Mamish Avodah Zarah. You know what happened to them? We don't know, but we know he buried them later. But he raised a very interesting point. I'm glad you raised the point of Lavan, because the next few psukim are going to see similarities to Lavan. So I don't know, again, this is one of these great inspirations which I have, which I don't know where to take, but we will see this in a moment. So we'll see, maybe you can make a connection. In the Vayifnu Vayechu, they turned and they went. They put their children and their sheep and their baggage in front of them. They knew they were going to have to fight a rear guard action against Micha soon, because Micha is going to run. When he finds, he's going to run after them. Just like Lavan ran after Yaakov. Yaakov also went slowly because he had a great and mighty a horde with him.
For the same reasons that he told Esau.
Vanias now lolly till regular I'm locha shelofona. Hey me chiku mi base micha. They got some distance out from micha. Vanashi ma sherva bati mi base micha. And the people were in the whole compound all over there with base micha. Nizaku, they were alarmed. Vayipikos bnei don. And they caught up the bnei don, the same lashes used by Lavan. Vayarbekas Yaakov Bahar. Vayikro bnei don. And they called out to bnei don. Hey, whoa, what's going on there? Vayasevu bnei, so the people from don turned around. Vayomer lemicha, and they said to micha, Malchakin Zakta, what are you shouting at us for? Ayomer, Micha said, what are you talking about? Esolohai Yasher Asisi Lekachtem. Very interesting. Here Micha himself calls it Elohai. Micha started off, we mentioned way back when, Micha started off in Yirei Shamayim, he didn't want to let his mother make the idol. When he made the idol was an idol which represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But now, Aver Gerer Saver, he's gotten to the point where he calls this idol Elohai, my God. Asher Asisi, which I made for myself, right? Lekachtem, you took, Vesakoin, and you took my priest also. The Malbim says, he said, if he hadn't taken the Kohen, at least he could manufacture for me another idol. But this way, I'm stuck. I don't have the idols, and I don't have the guy to manufacture them for me. Vesakoin, Vatelech, when you went, Umali Od, what else do I have remaining for me? Umazatom Reilai Malach, why are you telling me what's bothering you? You know what's bothering me. Vayom Eloh Bnei Don, and Bnei Don said to him, it's a fascinating pasuk, Rabbi Isai, Al Tashma Kol Chaymanu, don't you raise your voice at us. Pen Yivku Bachem Anoshi Mori Nefesh, because otherwise people who are angry, we are short-tempered, we Donites. If you're not careful, we are going to attack you. V'asafta nafshecha, and you're going to lose your life, v'nefesh beisecha, and the life of the members of your household. So I gather here together a few quotes from Reb Tzadok, just to give you an idea of what I think is going on here in the background. If you take a look here at my notes, on 25-26, read it and translate. Achtan, does everybody see that? It's on page 4, the bottom right. Koach Don, the power of Don, who midas hadin, is the power of judgment, but not judgment, strict judgment. Karashmo, like the name Don means, din. V'yadua, and it's known, b'shem midas hadin, that the name which corresponds to midas hadin, hushem Elokim, is the name Elokim, which in Parshas Mishpatim, which we just had a couple weeks ago, means Shofet, a judge, Elohim. Shom achizas haumos. Once you're in the name of Elohim, though, that's very close to Elohim achirim. Once you look at powers as being separate and distinct and meted out in judgment, then you're close to achizas haumos. Ki yesh gamkein Elohim achirim. We look at God only as Elohim, and only in the midas hadin, and not in the midas harachmim, the all-encompassing vision of the yudke vavke of the hoya hovev yir mahave akol, he was, is, and will be, and sustains everything. Then you start looking at the individual powers, you start being like the goyim. Ki b'shem zeh, why? Because in this name Elohim, we know Elohim in gematria is hateva, ki pulas hateva. That gives credence to nature. Hamat eliv ne'odom, which leads people astray also, lachshov, to think shakol derech hateva, that everything occurs naturally, or by other gods. Hayal Amalek achizah b'em l'zanvam. And Amalek, we know Amalek, when they cut off the milos in the midbar, they cut off the milos of the people from Shevet Dan. How could Amalek have a seize hold over them? V'lom atzvam ha'shebachayta, and it says that Amalek threw those milos up in the air and said, God, take that which you chose. K'yobem apsolas the pesel micha. Because they had the psoles, the refuse, the trash, a pesel micha shebar banochi shushar shayadus, who denied anochi the source of Yiddishkeit. In other words, this pesel micha business was because they were a low shevet, and that was what gave them this weakness to which they succumbed to Amalek. And Amalek kol ikar shimush hakas ruticha shenivra ba'olam. All of the usage of anger and of murder, which is creating the world, in Botzer Klal, it's not for any good purpose. Anger is never good. Rak Lazar Amalek. That's why anger is always identified with Amalek. Amalek are the people who are angry. Jews are not supposed to be angry people. If you find angry Jews, where are you most likely to find them? Shevet Dan, who were the closest to Amalek and the ones who centered on Midas Hadin. And Midas Hadin is that which is most likely, when you're very strict, to bring one to anger. Tigul Kas, and what rectifies Kas, anger? Shinui Makom. Changing your place, going to Golus. Kamosha Kasva Torah Golus L'Rotzeach. Like the Torah wrote that a Rotzeach should go into Golus, so too, the way to rectify anger is to put oneself into Golus as well. Now it's late, I don't know if I'll have time to see that. I did photocopy the whole Reb Tzadok where he speaks about that. Tikkun L'Kas Shinui Makom. It's on page 6. If we have time, I'll read it to you inside. It's short. But in any event, here too, I would say that the reason why Shevet Dan was put into Golus, they thought they went into Golus because they couldn't find a Nachla. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu also had a reason to try and get them to move. Because there were such kasanim, there were such ill-tempered, short-tempered people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said they need an antidote. What's the antidote? Just like a rotzeach, his tikkun, a murderer, his tikkun, his rectification is to go to an ir miklat, so to Shevet Dan, I'll give them a way, I'll diminish their anger. How? By having them be going to Golus. Did it work? No. He had no desire to change themselves. You can, Kodesh Baruch Hu can give siyata d'shmaya, but he can't. Siyata d'shmaya is not going to help if somebody has no drive on their own. So the Danites, they were angry people. They were close to the goyim in their character traits, and therefore they were also of the Avodah Zarah. And that's why, as we see right now, they are about to be murderous people. Vayelchu b'nei don l'darkom. B'nei don continued on their way. They basically ignored him, and they went on their derech, their evil derech. Vayar michal gichazaki meima. When michal saw he ignored them, they ignored him, and they were stronger than him. What could he do? He returned back to his house. They take that which Micha made. They took that Avodah Zarah, and the Avodah Zarah and cruelty are connected. And they took the coin which he had. And they came to Laish. To a nation which was tranquil and secure. Vayaku osam lefi charev. They smote them all by the sword. Not only that, something which we never find, they burned the city down to the ground. All right, the Radak tries to be malamit chus on Shevet Dan, why they had to burn the city and kill everybody. But I don't think that's Pashup Shah in the Pasuk. No, it's not Yeridach, they're going. He says that they needed it for some sort of tactical surprise, and so they had to burn it when they came in. And he says that maybe the people in there were sinners. They were of the Avodah Zarah. He said, hi, Shevet Dan was also of the Avodah Zarah. But these guys were worse. So they burned them. All right, that's what the Radak says. But I think Pashup Shah Pasuk is not like that. I think the Pasuk is clearly condemning Shevet Dan. This is not Jewish behavior. Halacha l'maisa, if a Jew goes to wage war against Goyim, what's the first thing the Jew has got to do? Be kori l'shalom, make peace overtures. Right? You have to let them escape, especially if this wasn't part of Eretz Canaan. Male in Eretz Canaan, so there was a special command to even there Yoshua sent all peace overtures. But there at least one can make the case that they can stand, go and conquer. But this is outside Eretz Canaan. They have no right to do this. This is cruelty, and which came as a result of Shevet Dan's negative character traits. They're functioning as they're being Morei Nefesh. There's nobody to save them because they're far away from their allies in Sidon, like we said before. And they had no relationship with the people nearby. And it was in the valley of Shiloh Beis Rechov. I guess it was surrounded on all sides by hills, which gave them a tactical disadvantage as well. And after they burnt it down and killed the city, they rebuilt the city for their own purposes. Vayeshuvan, they lived in it. A couple of things of just more peripherally here. Rashi says the term Laish, the name of the city, Laish, is linked to the word Leshem. And the Leshem was the stone in the Choshen, according to Rashi, or not everybody agrees, that's this week's parasha, from Parashas Tetzaveh. The stone in the Choshen which corresponded to Shevet Don. Alright, I don't know what to make of it because nobody knows what color the stone was. If we knew what color stone was, we could make some connection to Shevet Don. But some people say it was black, some people say it was orange, some people say it was blue, some people say it was green. No luck there. Alright, in the meantime, let's go further. Vayikru Shema Yir Don, they call the name of the city Don, B'Shem Don Aviyam. And in the name of Don, their forefather, Asher Yulad Yisrael, who was born to Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu. Why is it mentioned that this Asher Yulad Yisrael? The Radak says, Peepshat, don't think that there was a Don among those 600. They named it after the great-granddaddy Don. But I think that what it means is that Yisrael Apo Pishachot Yisrael. They were sinners. Hashem and Don is sinners. Nonetheless, must remember, after all said and done, they're still Asher Yulav Yisrael. They're still part of Am Yisrael.
Why didn't Yaakov
mention with? I don't know if he was Makbin on Nach. Because Makbin and Torah should be on Chamisha Chumshi Torah. I don't know if in Nach he was Makbin. Vayakim Alem B'nei Don is Apeh, V'ulam Laish Shemo Yel Rishoyna. However, Laish was its first name, and according to my understanding, the Pasuk is then again condemning them and saying Laish should have remained the name. They had no right to come and take this city. And of course, once they rebuilt the city, first order of business was to put up the peso, put up the aisle. Yonah's son, Ben Gershom, Ben Menashe. Yonah's son, and finally we see his name, the son of Gershom, the son of Menashe. And here Chazal makes a drush, and you see the nun is dangling. Chazal say, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. Then the nun was put there in order to spare him the grief, the embarrassment, and to say that this Yonah's son did the deed of Menashe, the king of Am Yisrael, much later, who was an Ovid Avodah Zarah. So this is obviously put in by Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Who, one of, he and his children, Hoyu Kohanim with Shevet Hadoni. It would be interesting, you know, if we could speculate here. I just realized, speculate that the Nun and Ashrei made its way to Menashe here. One could make something of that, but not for now. Who, one of, Hoyu Kohanim with Shevet Hadoni. They were the Kohanim for the Shevet Don, Ad Yom Glosarts, until the time the nation went into exile. But there's a contradiction here, because in Pasuk Lamed Aleph it says, "Vayasu lo yasim lehem es pesel micha asher asar." They put a pesel micha which micha made kol yemei ayos beis elokim b'shilo, as long as the Mishkan in Shiloh was up. Well, the Golus from Eretz Yisrael took place many hundreds of years after the Beis Hamikdash was built, and Shiloh was destroyed right at the time, even before the Beis Hamikdash was built. So, which is it? Were they Kohanim until the Golus? Or was Pesel Micha only there until the Beis HaMikdash was built? So there's several ways to resolve this contradiction. The Radak resolves it L'shita So, following his line of reasoning, that Pesel Micha was late. That happened at the time of, after the time of Shimshon. And he says that Golus Aretz refers to the Golus of the Aron. They were Kohanim for Shevet Don until the Aron was taken captive in the days of Eli. And that also was around the time that Shiloh was destroyed. So it wasn't very much time, it was only a few years. This is very difficult, because why would Shevet Don get rid of their Pesel then? Shevet Don was in the north of Eretz Yisrael at this point. The Shiloh was waved down in the south. The fact that Shiloh was attacked by the Goyim should have nothing to do with the fact with Shevet Don up north. So that's a very difficult thing to say. However, again, this is consistent with his opinion that Pesel Micha was late. The Ralbag says that this Golus refers not to the Golus which Sancheiriv wreaked on the 10 tribes of the north many years later, but it refers to Yavin Melech Hatzor. He learns that the Maisa with Pesel Micha was early at the time of Osniel. And at the time of Yavin Melech Hatzor, which immediately preceded Devorah's battle with Sisera, there was a Golus. How do we know it was a Golus? Because it says that, what does it say there? Don Yagur on Yos. Says that Don, in Shiraz Vart, says that Don was living on the boats. So the Rabban says that means that at the time of Sisera and Yavin's mastery over the land of Israel, so the Donites were forced to flee on boats away from their domain. And that time, when there was that Golus, was the time when Pesel Micha was destroyed. That was the time when the Kohanim ceased serving, when Yonason's children ceased serving as the Kohanim for the Pesel, but the Pesel itself still existed until Shiloh was destroyed several hundred years later. Now the Radak and Rabak are both bothered by the problem that why didn't David and Shlomo eradicate the Pesel? They say the Pesel must have been gone by the time David became king, because otherwise he must have gotten rid of it. It's intolerable for them to say that Glossarts means the ghosts of Sancheriv, because what's going on? All those years, David and Shlomo tolerated this Avodah Zarah, this infamous Avodah Zarah in the north of Israel. So the Rashi Malbim, however, learned Kipshuto. They learned simple that Glossarts means until Sancheriv came. And that David, in fact, eradicated the Pesel. He got rid of it. Afterwards, and this is the Gemara the Yerushalmi says, they found another Avodah Zarah. When Yerobam came, when Yerobam and Nevat came on the scene, what Avodah Zarah did he introduce? Which idols? Eagles. Golden calves. And one he put in Shomron, and the other he put in Don. And when Yonason jumped on the bandwagon of the new Avodah Zarah, he was still around, because Gemara says he used to live for hundreds of years. So I think. Right, no, he and Pinchas used to correspond with each other, right? So Pinchas was on one side, he was on the other side. So they're still corresponding with each other. So in any event, so Yonason was then, he jumped on the new bandwagon. And the Rishami says that he was of Navi Sheker for this Avodah Zarah in Don. Okay? Now I want to show you Reb Tzadok on that. Let's turn to page 5, rather. Reb Tzadok says in Kuf Pei Aleph here, in Sidkas HaTzadok. Every person has a special desire. And adapting which he has the most lust and desire, but in that itself he can be makabel the bracha of Hashem, he receives the blessing of Hashem, im yashuv Hashem b'chol libo, if he does true tshuva. What is true tshuva? Lakir to know shechemdazu anatua bo, to know that this desire which he has planted in Hashem is baruch hu. It says that David HaMelech appointed Shvuel, the son of Gershom, the son of Moshe, to be his treasurer. Why? Came to David Shmaman Chaviv Allah B'Yoser. It says Shvuel is Yonason. Why is he called Shvuel? Because he did Shuva. Why did David HaMelech make him the treasurer? Because since came to David Shmaman Chaviv Allah B'Yoser, since he saw he liked money, that's why he became the Kohen in Pesel Micha. So Mina Alotros, he made him the treasurer. Varei Otsos Ein Shelo. As for Tzadok, the treasure didn't belong to him. Lo Nasal Otsos Klal, he didn't get any money from that. Uvameiz Biachem Doso, how was his lust satiated? Im Bishvil Kvashuki was because of his salary, who was in Yomun Adavacher. He would have gotten the same salary if he was appointed on something else. Ach Bemes Tor Shusham, but the Pshat is that there they said, Ushvuel, he's called Shvuel, Shushab B'chol Libo, he did true with all his heart. Vatshuva, what's tshuva? Hayushameshiv chemda zulam kaira. He returns this desire to its source. Umakir, and he remembers Shalohi's brach that Hakadosh Baruch Hu is the source of akesav azav and silver and gold. Therefore, he can be the treasure of David HaMelech, because now he knows only to use money and to give out the money to dole it out to the right purposes. L'shem Shamayim. Shemalchuso midas malchus Shamayim. The attribute of David is the attribute of kingship for the sake of heaven. V'chominuyev, and all of his appointments, Hainu Shamamun alosa davar, was that the person who was appointed to that matter, Hayamakir, would know, V'odea, laknosa kol, to devote everything, le'elyon, kone shemayim v'arts, to God, the creator of heavens and earth. Gan bracha v'atzaras bal yadu. And there was a bracha, a blessing to the treasuries on his part, on Shavuot's part. Came in Shiatora, Hashem Yitzbarach v'Briya Chaymed Mamon, since God created him with this great lust for money. Akein Yishbo Koch Hatsum is that. Therefore he has a great spiritual power for force in this as well. The came on Shishab B'choli, once he did complete Tshuva, Harei Bircha Seh Hashem B'Mamon Al Yado, the bracha in money came through him. V'gam Nehem Ha'tova Ein Hu Yivarach. And it also says somebody who has a good eye, he's blessed. And it says that he was miserly with Kates Avodah Zarah, Kmo Shisa B'Yerushalmi. We saw it last week, that when somebody would come to bring a big carbon to Pesel Micha, he would say, don't bother. Bring a few eggs and flour. And then he himself would eat the eggs and flour. So he was very miserly vis-a-vis the Avodah Zarah. Vayinam Shum Shechem Das Mamon, but it wasn't just that. It was in general, he loved money himself, and he didn't want anybody else to have money. Vayinam Shum Shechem Das Mamon, Eino Tzar B'Shal Achirim. Since he had such a great desire for money, he didn't want anybody else to have them. By the way, the Yerushalmi here is brought down in the footnote at length. You can take a look at that later if you want. And the continuum is, somebody who's very bad and is very jaundiced when he looks at others, very miserly. When he does tshuva, he becomes very generous and does things properly. That's where he got the bracha. You see, later the Yerushalmi that brings down do Navi Zaki the Beisel. Later on, he became the false Navi in Beisel in Yerubam's Avodah Zarah. That's what we say. Later on, he became a Navi for a new Avodah Zarah. Uva Sanhedrin Amru Olav, he went back to his old ways. Sanhedrin Amru Olav, and Sanhedrin says about him that at the end of his life, he did die. Unlike Pinchas, he did die. He had all of a sudden a Nevuah Semes, a true Nevuah. Why? It says there because Gedoilo Legima Shemash Shechina Live Deabal. Because he gave some, he was Machnis Oreach. He brought in a guest to his house, a real Navi, and as a result, he himself got a real Nevuah, and he was able to prophesy something to this other Navi. Alright, that's in Sefer Melachim, not for now. So there, it says of Tzadok, brings down the Gemara and Sanhedrin, Amalulav, it says about Shvuel, Yonason, Gedoyel Legima, very great is Achnosis Orachim, giving somebody Shemash Shechino of the Baal, brings the divine presence to worshippers of the Baal. The Pella, this is amazing. Atu Echon, Machil, Achaver, Tishrol, Shechina, if I invite you into my house, I'm going to get the Nevuah. What's the big deal? The Pshayas Raklefisha, Betovai, Nemakinosa, Milachmo, Dadladal. It says by a person who's generous, magnanimous, that he gives his bread to poor people. But who was Chazal Kulo? He went back to his old ways by a tsar, and he was the big miser and skinflint. By him it was Take Big Chiddush that he should be Machnis Oreach. And therefore, Ki Hashem Yisbarach Dan Kol Echad Kafi Mashum Midosav, since God judges everybody based on their own midos, since it took such an act of overwhelming Yetzer Tov in order for him to bring in this guy and be machlis him oreach, so therefore he got a nevuah as a result. Alright, that's one interesting tzaddik. Let's see if we can do... Oh no, this Yonason. Yonason, the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was his name. This Yonason is this Shavuel. He's the same guy. He was Yonason, the Kohen of Pesel Micha. Then he was Shavuel, the treasure of David HaMelech. And then afterwards he became the Navi Zaki, the Beisel, the false Navi by Rav. Let's see this one more on the opposite side page of page 6. Just a little bit of it. Tikun lakas, shinui mokum, pay. The rectification for anger, shinui mokum, is moving. Kmosh kasva Torah goes to rotzeach. And like the Torah said, that the rotzeach should go into golus. And I'm skipping now the parentheses, but he describes in greater length here. The brackets, I should say. The Namar Bakain Novinati, and Bakain also says Golos. That was the first correction with Golos. The Tikul Taiva, the correction for Taiva, for lust, is Shunimaisa, changing one's ways. Shabbat Dvaraver Liyodo, that if another Aver comes to hands, Venitzel Emena, and you can restrain yourself in that, Nitkana Koidem, that corrects the previous deed. The Tikul Kavod, and correcting the Aver of seeking pride, is Shinui Hashem, is changing one's name. Vizel Shemoy Lechoyle. And that's why it works for Chayla, because sometimes sometimes his haughtiness is what caused him to be pushed away. Alright, so it's an interesting thing. Perhaps another time we'll see it in greater length, how all these different tikkunim work for the different Averos. One more thing. I have here on page, I wrote down on page 6, page 5, a couple of things about Micha, which I didn't explain last week. I'll explain them just very briefly. It says about Micha also, just like Shavuel Yonason. It says, Lefisha Mekabel Orchim, since he was Mekabel Orchim, Nichtav Shmok Hashem Atzik, at the beginning of the Maisa calls him Michio. And if they Malo, Minus Micho, Ben Eil Shein Leo Chel Kol Mahaba, why was he not involved, numerated among those who don't have a portion of the world to come? And they should Pito Metzuya L'Ovei Drachim. because he was the house for the wayfarers. He had the place for them to get to eat. Vavar bayam tzara, and this terrible thing passed in the sea. Zep pislo shomisu micha. That's the pesla micha. Migarav l'shilo, from Garav, where pesla micha was to shilo was only 3 meal. Vayashana ma'aracha, and the smoke from the carbonos in shilo, vayashana pesla micha, and the smoke from pesla micha, misarvim zebazeh, would mingle together. Bikshu malach hasheres l'dachbo. So malach hasheres wanted to get rid of micha. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, hanichu lo, let him be. Shepito metzuyah lo ovrei drachim. He's a big machnis orech. It's an extraordinary thing. For all other intents and purposes, he should have been one of those Einlam Chelek Olam Haba. And yet, because he was a Machnis Orech, he gets a Chelek Olam Haba. Not only that, as a result, they allowed the Ashan, the smoke of Shiloh, and the smoke of Pesel Micha to mix together. What's going on here? So, in just a brief, I mentioned the Maisa from the Rizal, I think last week, with that, and I'll just mention the principle again, which is that a person who makes a mistake, even a mistake of apikorsus, if he thinks he's doing the right thing with chavad shamayin, then he has a chayek olam haba. And so too Micha, he made a mistake. Eventually it led him to actual idolatry. But at the beginning he thought, this is a physical manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was sincerely, it seems, misguided and mistaken in thinking this. This is apikorsus, it's kfira. He thought he was doing the right thing. What's the raya that he thought he was doing the right thing? Because he was a machnis orchim. He's remained like all other Jews. Rachmanim baishanim gomle chasadim. Shevet Don, they're the ones who were influenced negatively. They became roitzchim kasanim. They weren't rachmanim, they weren't gomle chasadim. It was Micha was mistaken. It was a terrible, terrible mistake, which came from whatever reason. We mentioned last week that it came because he was physical, it was very chomeristic, and that's why he was put in the pyramids in Egypt, not for this evening. But it was a mistake. And therefore, a Jew is mistaken, even if it's a terrible mistake, he still has a chayel kolam haba. It's only a Jew who goes completely away in an intentional and destructive manner. Those are the few people who enumerate a perichelik as Einlam chayel kolam haba.